Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Joining me in center ring today, ready for the holidays, is Molly Wilder. Molly is coming to us from Idaho, close to Boise. I love that. I love talking to people in different states and in different countries. It's so much fun. I mean, in real time as we're doing it. Molly is a certified divorce coach, but she comes from a psychology background. Not only is she a certified divorce coach, but she also worked in transition and recovery. And we're going to touch upon this a little bit in the show because when divorce happens, it's for a myriad of reasons, of course, but one of the issues is substance abuse, and it is one of the hardest issues to deal with in mediation, when there's children involved, and even in the filing process, because as hard as it is to get divorce, if you add on substance abuse, it's almost impossible to get through it. But just a little bit of Molly's biography. She really does understand the things that most terrify people in a failed marriage, a broken family, possible financial ruin, just a reconstruction of every part of your life. And with compassion and deep respect, which are her founding principles for grief, anger, and trauma, Molly can help you in more facets of your divorce than most coaches because of that background, definitely in transition and recovery. And one of the things I want to talk to you about, Molly, as we proceed through this conversation is because this is a podcast devoted to amicable divorces and showing people how to be amicable, I want to work on the word failed with you because I use it a lot. People use it a lot, and I'm wondering if we can't find another word. But Molly, welcome. All of this on our plate for today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
This is great, and I really appreciate the time. So all good divorce coaches have gone through their own divorce, have they not?
Very often that's the case.
Was it the case with you?
Yes, it certainly was. I was actually married for 28 years, and like most people, the farthest thing from my imagination was this idea that I could end up divorced one day, very committed and to my marriage and to my family, and I spent about a decade railing against what I kind of thought was coming and just determined to ward it off at all costs, and finally ended in came to a place of surrender and acceptance that our marriage wasn't working and it was time to let go.
Were you and your now former husband both of like mind for about 10 years and both committed to making it work if at all possible?
Yes, absolutely. We were both really committed. We were both frustrated. So 10 years before we got divorced is when we actually started dipping our toes in and out of therapy. So I think we were both very committed to the relationship and to our family. And that added to the intensity and the frustration because we both wanted it to work and we could not figure out how to make it work. And so, you know, that's just a tough place to be in.
It is. And I'm leading you only because mm-hmm. we've talked and I know a little bit about your background, but I think this is going to be interesting to quite a lot of people. Did religion play a part in your, in both of your attempts to keep the marriage together?
Absolutely. So we were committed Christians practicing in the faith. And divorce wasn't really an option. Honestly, I didn't even view it as an option. So for me, it was about trying to make the marriage work and be, you know, a happy marriage, if you want to call it that. It's kind of a cliche expression, but I just wanted us to work well together and to be happy and in love. And because the option otherwise was just to stay married and be miserable. So there, I wasn't really seeing divorce as an option. I really did view my vows were till death do us part. So as divorce rattled around in there, like I said, I lived in denial for a long time. Like, that's just not an option I could even consider. And as my own journey kind of evolved and I began to kind of step out of my faith and recognize this faith that's holding me in this marriage, I don't know that I actually buy into it, and started to have my own like experience of questioning my faith. And as I did that, then I was able to open up that there are options out there that I previously haven't considered as possible. So it kind of went, the, you know, as my faith fell apart, the marriage continued, we still continued to work on the marriage, but we started to consider that maybe divorce could be an option for us, that it wasn't going to be this thing that we were going to have to just stay stuck there forever.
So apparently your former husband agreed with you that, yes, if at all possible, we would like to stick with what our faith has laid out for us. But happiness and fulfillment is so important, or it ruins every other part of your life. That's a very difficult place to be in, and it's two huge issues that people have to weigh, isn't it? I mean, huge.
It is huge. It is huge. No, it was an overwhelming thing to face, kind of linking your faith and your marriage and watching them both crumble at the same time. And it was just the way of things. Like, it's that whole idea. Honestly, if you've heard of the Serenity Prayer, it's help me, you know, help me change what I can change and accept what I can't change, and wisdom to know the difference. And so that was where I found myself, was really grappling with what parts are my responsibility and what can I impact and what do I have to let go of? So, you know, and asking, even asking the question, do I have a right to be happy? That was a huge one. I probably spent a year grappling with that question. Do I have a right to be happy? Or is that sinful and selfish to desire that?
Okay, so this has always been interesting to me, how religion plays a part in just in people's everyday lives in terms of how they seek fulfillment. And I go back to when we decide to get married, because I'm also divorced. When we decide to get married, the circumstances around that decision depend on how old you are, how much life experience you have, what your experience with your parents' marriage is like. You know, maybe they stayed together, but you didn't see them all that happy. And what does then happiness look like? Does it look like what if you had parents that weren't happy but stayed together for a variety of reasons, religion being one of them?
For sure.
Is that really the model to follow?
Right.
And then, I mean, we all say it's such a cliche, life is short, but at any point in time, at any age, we could look back and say, gosh, where did the time go?
Totally. Yeah, I think that's a really great point you make. I know that both my husband and I, my former husband, looked at our parents as the model, that you just stick with it and you stay married, come hell or high water. And that's the terms of us. That's how you define a successful marriage, is does it last forever? And when I started considering, maybe that's not the measure we should be using, and definitely having discussions along those lines with my ex-husband, we ultimately, that our final conversation was literally that we don't speak the same language. It's time to let each other go. And there doesn't have to be a bad guy. It doesn't have to be your fault or my fault, but me expecting him to change and being so frustrated that he couldn't, when I started thinking about it, could I be like him? And the answer is no, I'm not. I don't think like he does. I don't move through the world in the same way that he does. And I couldn't do it his way any more than he can do mine.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. And more than likely, he's looking at you in the same way, is why doesn't she understand me? Why don't we speak the same language? And all of that. And that's so important for people to realize that, yes, we each come to our individual decisions about what works for us. And so do our partners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if we're not at the same point, then yeah, we have to find an alternative. But even more important, a decision equally important than the religion was, how many children did you have?
We had 7 children. So, you know, that's a big one too. I mean, for me, some of the reasons, like if I picture myself just with my heels out against, like fighting against this idea, I had 7 kids. I was a full-time stay-at-home mom for 26 years. So when I say I was invested in the family, I mean, some of that's just really practical. Like I didn't have a career that I'd been investing in. And the resources it takes to care for that many kids, that big of a family, you kind of do need a stay-at-home parent. And so, you know, it's like, this isn't even an option to divorce. Like neither one of us can function without the other in this little, I don't know what you would call it, just this family is more like a little machine. Like it takes all hands on deck.
It's a little ship, a little corporation unto itself. That's a lot of kids. But would you please share with people how many were biological, how many weren't, and why you have as many non-biological as you do? Because I think this is a phenomenal story.
Yeah. No, it is. It's a beautiful story. We have 3 by birth and 4 by adoption. You know, a lot of what drove us into adoption was our faith. We wanted to provide a family for kids who didn't have a family. And we loved that idea. And we were like, this is what we have to offer the world. And this is what we want to provide. And so that really motivated our adoptions. And yeah, that's, so again, just talking about how woven together all of these ideas are, you know, so many of the things that we built our family on were around faith. So it was tough to uncouple all of that, figure out where does our family, I love this idea and I would love to talk to you about this because you mentioned it earlier, but a failed marriage. It's one of the things I like to actually play on that. Because what I say is, I'll help your failed marriage end in a smashing success. This idea that when the marriage, quote unquote, fails, that it doesn't have to be that way. It can be a beautiful success story. And it's one of the things that I love about how our family has figured out how to navigate this, albeit in a roundabout way, because it's never just easy or linear. But our family's still a family. We're not a broken family.
Now, say more about this because it's so fascinating. You are the model of amicable, even as you both have moved on and created other families. Would you mm-hmm. please share how this works for both of you?
Right. Well, when we had our initial, like I said, we had a conversation that was really the end of our marriage, where we said, it's time, we need to stop, this has to stop. And we were on the same page that we did not want to hurt our kids. Now, granted, that doesn't mean it's not going to hurt, and it is a painful process. But at the end of the day, our kids are going to grow up and move on and have their own lives. And could we figure out a way to navigate this such that as our kids are coming back into the family for holidays or graduations and, you know, birthdays, that we actually still have, we still are a family unit. Because if you think about it, even with a couple that stays married, the kids grow up and they're just dipping back in for these different things or inviting family. And like, could we do that? Could we pull that off? And so our intention from the very beginning, in fact, from the very first week that we made this decision, family dinners were still on every week. When I moved out, we rotated from my house on one weekend his house the next, but family dinners never stopped.
So you're the one that moved out.
I moved out of the family home. Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about how that decision happened? Because that's a big decision point for...
Right. You know, for us, it was just practical. He made more money than me. At that point, I did have a job, but it was like we loved our family home. We still wanted our family home to be a meeting place for our family. It was set up really well for that because at that point, four of our kids were out of the home. So our family was very much, you know, coming together for big meals and holidays and things like that, but we weren't all living under the same roof.
So the four children that were not living at home, were they part in college, part out of college?
Yes.
Like that?
Yep.
Because I started thinking while you were talking, well, wait a minute, whomever moves out of the house, they still have to get someplace that can accommodate all the kids. Yeah. I'm thinking, how many bunk beds did this woman get?
Yes. No, that was, you know, so I was able to just, the house that I found, it sleeps, there's three kids and me. So, you know, it was just set up for those people to live. But absolutely, when I filled out and looked at homes and the layout, I was thinking what homes have the layout where I can host events at my house. But I moved out because, yeah, I didn't make as much money and his payment was that the house payment for our family home was going to be more than I was going to be able to afford. So it was very practical.
Are any of your kids married?
Yes. Two of our kids are married.
Two of them are married. Okay.
Yes.
So did you ever have a situation once there were two households where all seven children wanted to be with you? We know your former house was set up for seven, but did you ever have to host seven, by the way?
Oh, I hope.
Time?
I mean, as far as sleeping over or?
Yes.
No, because everybody lives local. Like, we have one that moved away now, but everybody's local. So everybody has their own homes and their own, you know, or dorm rooms or wherever they were living at the time. So I had one daughter who was college age and she would come over and spend the night with me quite a bit, but she'd just sleep in my bed with me. So when she wanted to come over and have time. Yep.
That is really sweet. Okay. So great divorce.
I think and as good as it gets.
As good as it gets.
Yep.
Excellent. Now he moved on and found another partner first, or did you kind of do it simultaneously? Because you have somebody else in your life now too, right?
Yes, we both do. He found the person that he's with pretty quickly. I was dating some at the time, but I'm about 6 months behind him as far as the person that I'm with now. And but yeah, he found her and she, I mean, it's just a testament to, she's amazing. She has totally embraced our family, that we are a family. So it's pretty incredible.
That is really incredible to the point where, and I want to talk about holidays and children in a second, but why don't we start off with the holiday Christmas card? Would you please also share this unusual way your blended families does the Christmas card?
Well, you know, we haven't done a Christmas card for it yet, but we did have family photos taken, all of us together. And I think, again, it's really a message to my kids. I want them to see we are still a family. So when my former husband and his wife got married, all the family was in town. And so we went ahead and I organized a photographer separate from the wedding event to take our picture all together. And I do. It's one of the ways I'm committed to showing my kids we are still a family. We are different. We are evolving and we are growing and changing and shifting, but we're still a family.
You're the Jetsons of divorce, completely ahead of society. So I just love that when you were explaining to me that the blended family took the holiday card, because that's what it is.
It's so beautiful. I'm so grateful. And I love letting people know what's possible. It doesn't mean it always can work out this way. And I don't think anybody should feel guilty if their family situation doesn't work out that way. But I wonder, if you knew it was possible, how would it shift how you showed up? Because I think there's so much fear about what's going to happen. And there's so much grief in watching the evolution, if you want to call it that, that you can make decisions out of that fear that create a domino effect and make it impossible. Now, it's not ever impossible, but you know, you can always say, hey, I want to show up differently. But what, how would it shift your decisions and the way you speak to each other and the way you collaborate together if you knew this was possible on the other side, that you could find a partner that was a really great fit for you and your partner could find a partner that was fabulous for them and your families could come together? Like, what if that was possible? How would that impact the way that you show up for your divorce? And I think the answer is it might change quite a lot.
I think it may change quite a lot too, but you're right. It depends on who the two spouses are. Is there anything to forgive? Was there an event that happened, or was it just life, just the transition of life, which it sounds like it was with both of you? Nobody created an impossible situation by virtue of an act or a series of acts. It was just both of you evolving. But what do you do in a situation, and I'm sure it's come up for you in your coaching business, what do you do when one person is challenged by substance abuse and there are children? Mm-hmm. How do you handle that if you're dealing with the spouse that isn't challenged by substance abuse? How do you coach them on dealing with that in the divorce?
I think there's a lot of different, there's a lot to that. At the end of the day, though, it goes back to that serenity prayer, which is very familiar among the recovery community, accepting what can't be changed and then putting all of your effort and energy into the parts of the puzzle that you have direct agency over. And I think what I had a little saying I used to say to myself all the time, the things I do control, that's a full-time job. If I put all of my energy toward things, but you want to blame the person who it's their fault, this is all falling apart. Do you know how much energy that takes? Wallowing takes a lot of energy. Trying to figure out how to control all the things that you don't control. People spend their entire lives doing that.
Well, let me be specific then about substance abuse and the co-parenting.
Yes.
What options do people have when they're having that discussion? Let's just say they're not litigating. Mm-hmm. They want to do it in a more amicable way. So they're going to mediation and maybe they're hiring. Well, we have a level of service called Legal Document Preparation Company. So in California, you either hire attorneys to do the paperwork for the filing or you do it yourself, which is crazy making beyond belief. Mm-hmm. Or you hire, and I'm one of these people, you hire a legal document preparation company and a mediator, and you get through the filing and the decision making then through mediation. But mm-hmm. I have found it to be enormously difficult to preside over a mediation when one spouse says, look, I'm very concerned with you having the children overnight. Mm-hmm. You drink and pass out. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people that drink enough to pass out, and now marijuana is legal in so many different states recreationally.
Right.
Is it legal recreationally?
No, not in Idaho.
Okay. Well, it is in quite a few states now. And people, whether it's legal or not, do smoke it or they take other things. What is a person to do? What options do you think they have in dealing with this issue?
Yeah, I mean, the hard thing to accept is that if you're choosing to mediate, you are ultimately collaborating together with the spouse that you're divorcing and the professionals that you hire, and you are having to entrust yourself and your children to this process, and it isn't always perfect, but you know, it really is going to depend on what parameters you can put on the shared parenting. You know, a lot of people end up, you're going to be sharing parenting, and that's just the way it's going to be, unless you want to go into litigation and fight for that. It is sometimes the reality. And so, you know, trusting that the way that you show up to parent and the impact that you can have, similar to if you were still married to that person, that you only have so much impact and that you do have to accept some things are out of your control. And so looking for the areas that you do have control and playing those to your full advantage.
Molly, in California, and I'm sure it's this way in many other states, if a parent knows that the other parent is challenged by substance abuse and they do tend to put themselves in a position where they can't really look after the children, that parent who allows their children to go with the other parent, mm-hmm. that their kids can be taken away from them. This is a very, very serious legal issue. And this is why I kind of wanted to see where you were as a coach on this. I know you don't work in the legal system. I understand that. I know. I know you don't work in the legal system, but people listening do have this issue. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to make a statement that as a mediator who has people in the room, I have, I think maybe once in 9.5 years, mm-hmm. had the parent who is challenged by substance abuse say, I'm going to get help. Almost never in a mediation will that parent admit to having an issue that would become prohibitive. Mm-hmm. One of the kids got hurt and he wasn't present,
wow.
cognitively present.
Mm-hmm.
So this does happen enough. Would you suggest that they seek legal advice on at least this one issue?
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I would definitely suggest that they take, you know, anything that I can't answer. That's one of the things as a coach, we do have to be really careful because we can't practice law. Yeah. But I absolutely refer my clients. They don't even have to have, they don't have to be working with a lawyer full, you know, have somebody on retainer to hire them and work with them on an hourly basis to talk about those types of issues that they need to know. They need to know the law and the right.
They need to know the law of the state. Every state is different, but I know in California, if you allow your children to go with the other parent, and that parent has issues with drugs and alcohol, and something happens to the kids, mm-hmm. Child Protective Services will take the children away from both of you.
Right. Yeah.
For a while until everything is sorted out. This is really serious. I think this is, for me, one of the biggest roadblocks when I get into mediation, because I can't do anything about it. I mean, I'm not the truth police.
Right.
I don't live with these people. I don't really see what it's like. But generally, a parent is not going to state that another parent has an issue with drugs and alcohol if they don't. Generally, they won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when I look at your psychology background, in your bio, when it talks about transition and recovery, are you talking about that? Or are you talking about transition and recovery from divorce?
Yes.
That's what you're talking about. Okay.
Yes.
So I misunderstood. But still, all coaches are going to run into this.
Right.
If you haven't already, great, but you are going to run into it. And so,
honestly, you know, I definitely have my areas of expertise with coaching and the areas that I most want to work in. And I would probably refer somebody to a coach that specializes in working with substance abuse issues, because that isn't what my background is in.
But you know what, Molly, just to support you, to be honest with you in that, mm-hmm. it's not in almost anybody's background. Mm-hmm. It is the hardest thing when it comes up in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force somebody to admit that.
No.
It's really such a roadblock to have to deal with. And this is where I think that compromise and understanding your spouse and what they really want out of the settlement is important. And I'll just throw this out there. And that is knowing that your spouse more than likely is not going to have a full conversation. Yes, I drink too much. I take drugs. I smoke too much. Most people are not going to sit in a mediation or in a one-on-one with their spouse and completely agree. They're going to fight. They're going to resist.
Right.
And so I think, and I'd just love to get your reaction on this, I think that see what your spouse wants to get out of the settlement in terms of child support and visitation. Do they want it to look like on paper that they're sharing visitation, they have 50-50, but they're not really, they don't really want to, and it's okay? And is the further compromise that you can make on child support? So in order to keep your children safe, and out of harm's way, I'm suggesting, just to brainstorm, that you, if you can't hold your soon-to-be former spouse's feet to the fire and have him or her acknowledge that there's a problem there, and that problem may spill over into, I may not be fully awake and aware if anything happens when I have the kids overnight. That could be maybe in the compromise to, okay, on paper, it's going to look like we have 50-50 time, but I know I've got them 99% of the time and you're going to take them out for ice cream.
Right.
How does that sit with you as a coach?
I mean, I think it's reality. I do think it's reality sometimes. Again, looking at, you know, speaking with a lawyer and finding out what your options are. But I think we're doing that all the time. We're weighing the pros and cons and the cost benefit. And I think any of us to keep our kids safe are willing to make those decisions.
Yeah, I bet. Because that's just the idea. I mean, you're a parent of seven children. Just the idea that anything could happen to your children must be...
No, I know.
Okay.
There are some really tough, you know, there's just some really tough realities that people have to deal with. And what I always come back to is we have to work within reality, and we can buck against it because it doesn't seem fair or it's not right, or we can accept this is what is. What am I going to do with it? What are the resources I have, and how am I going to creatively and resourcefully approach this problem?
And with your tenets of empathy, compassion, all of that, you know, I'm just thinking of this for the first time, to be honest with you. I'm thinking out loud with you. Just to offer that spouse, the challenged spouse, if this is an issue, the compassion to say, I understand why you may use these substances. Because you do understand. If you take a step back and the divorce isn't an issue and the kids aren't an issue and you were just to look at that person as an individual, you probably know that person well enough to know why.
Totally.
And I've never actually approached it like this, even in mediation. So I'm going to have to think about it the next time it comes up. But to offer that person a level of empathy and compassion that I understand where this is coming from. And I would be open to waiting until you could explore this and get yourself as healthy as possible so that we could both have a wonderful co-parenting relationship. Now that's a dialogue that you don't often hear.
No, it's not. I think too, when I think about compassion, it goes hand in hand with boundaries. Often the reason we can't access compassion is because we don't have boundaries in place that kind of give us some cushion from that. And so often the separation or the divorce is what is needed so that you can access compassion for somebody's addiction. But you need to be able to get yourself out of that situation. You need to be able to get your kids out of it to a certain extent, to the extent that it's possible. And now because I have boundaries in place that I'm taking care of my own self, I can access compassion and recognize you struggle. But it's not my job to make sure you don't have any bad consequences, for example, to cushion all the blows for you. You get to go off and live your life and let the chips fall where they may. And I'm going to take ownership of my piece of it. So I think compassion is a lot more accessible with some of the boundaries that are accessible through divorce.
Well said. I think that's well said. In order to have compassion, in order to be sensitive, you do have to work in a different sphere. You do have to have the boundaries. The boundary would be, we're transitioning out of the marriage. Mm-hmm. I am now going to take care of, it's just using your words.
Right.
I am now going to take care of myself because I need to. Mm-hmm. I can't make your life different. Mm-hmm. Probably that person has tried.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Programs, you know, going down that road. But then there's a certain point where if it's not working for me, I'm not functional for the kids either. And so, yes, you have to make that choice.
Yeah. And it's messy. You know, I don't think the truth is we can't protect our kids from the entirety of that situation. It does impact the kids, but we have more power than we think we have. And I think that's the important message to always come back to. We have so much more power than we sometimes give ourselves credit for.
I agree. I really agree. Let's talk about the holidays a little bit and how people approach, who goes where, you know, what are some of your approaches? How would you like to present this?
Oh man, I have a kind of a whole framework around the holidays that I like to discuss with my clients, because I think that holidays are loaded for everybody, for families in general. And then you throw divorce into the mix, and especially, well, honestly, I feel like if you can get through those first couple of years with, you know, kind of a mindset shift, it's going to be just an incredible gift. And so I actually have, I kind of made an acronym out of the word gift.
Okay, let's do that.
All right. All right. So I feel like with the holidays, G is for get curious. What am I thinking about the holidays? And as I have stepped back to look at the holidays, you know, it's kind of a shared fantasy. We have all these ideas about what the holidays are supposed to be.
That's right.
And we have all the movies about the holidays, and we just have all these ideas, and we're bombarded with marketing images. And so if you can get curious about the stories that you have about holidays, the stories that you want to believe, like Santa, I'm using that as an example. Just, you know, we have these ideas we want to believe and we all buy into it, but it isn't real. And so if we can get curious about our stories, what am I telling myself? What am I thinking? Oh, the holidays are ruined now. Or the holidays will never be the same. If you initiated divorce, you might think, what have I done? I've ruined our family. If you're on the other side of it, you're thinking this person ruined. So you can cultivate a lot of these really, I don't know, these kind of poison thoughts that are going to bring a real, they're going to bring a lot of negative energy to the holidays. So if you can get curious and start asking yourself, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? Like, how do those stories make me feel? And just, you know, kind of look for where am I bringing these perfectionistic ideals? That's another one. So many women or men, anybody around the holidays, we have these perfect ideal images that we're shooting for. So if we can get curious, that's a place to start. And then the I stands for inquiry.
Hold on, I want to just stop because I loved what you said.
Okay.
Perfectionist ideals.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that. I know this is your own because I've never heard it before. And isn't that the truth, that we have in our minds what the perfect holiday is? Mm-hmm. And then if anything changes, we don't allow it to be a change for the better. And if we have this in our heads, then it must be the way it should be,
right?
Without change.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, even if you don't have the kids for it, you might think, I'm supposed to be with my family for Christmas. And you just can get fixated on that. And then, you know, what's going to come of that if you let that kind of stew all month long?
Sadness.
So much sadness, yeah. So much grief. So I think but you have to start by that curiosity. You have to kind of start looking at that. And what am I thinking and how does that feel? And where's that going to end? Kind of anticipating. How's that going to go if I'm going to nurse that all month long?
So. And possibly, well, can I come up with something else that may be fun?
Right. Right. Well, that's the next one.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Aye. So you're going to, you know, inquire about that. Is this true? You know, this is the whole Byron Katie. Is it true? Can I absolutely positively know without a doubt this is true?
Byron Katie, I know him to have that phrase, life happens for you, not to you. Is that what you were thinking or another Byron Katie quote?
No, it's the same. It's the same Byron Katie, but she's just...
Oh, she. I'm so sorry. I thought it was a he. Oh, my God.
No, no worries.
Well, what you don't learn on this podcast.
That's right. That's right. She has a whole thing called the work. And the work is kind of a process of inquiry. And the first big question is it true? Can I absolutely, positively know that this is true? So if we're thinking, now the holidays are ruined, is it true? Can you know absolutely, positively, without a doubt, that the holidays are ruined? And when you can start to open up like, well, maybe not. Oh, maybe not. You know, you can let go of some of these things that you're holding so closely. Who would I be in this? Who would I be if it wasn't true? What if being alone on Christmas isn't the worst thing ever? What if you could let go of that? What could happen then? Who could you be? And you think, oh, well, I could have a whole day of self-care on Christmas. I could take a hot bath and I could read a book and I can recreate Christmas 2 days later. We can just pretend that now it's Christmas morning all over again. Like maybe it isn't ruined. So if you can open up to this idea that things aren't as we often think they are.
And Molly, just to continue on that, who are they ruined for? Are they ruined for your children who are off having fun in somebody else's house?
Right. Yes. They could have two Christmases.
See, and I think, so you raise such an excellent point on this because who are they ruined for? If they're ruined for you because your only scenario is everybody's sitting at your table and that's mm-hmm. the only way you're going to enjoy right. yourself, well, it's ruined for you. But so yeah, just to identify even that piece, who are they? What is it? Who is it ruined for?
Right. Who are they without this story? Who could they be without this story? And I notice an immediate lifting. As soon as people start to play with this, they recognize, oh, there could be another way. And as soon as we know there could be another way, we can actually, again, put our energy toward creating another way. So I love Byron Katie's work around inquiry. Are you ready for F?
I am.
Okay, F is for follow your heart, not the fantasy.
I love that phrase. I use that a lot. Keep going.
I love it too. So it's, what is the spirit of Christmas for you? What really matters? And how can you make it so? And when you start to think about like, what's important to me? So for me, it's... I do like things to be pretty and I like the smell of candles and I like some yummy food and you might go to your kids. What's really important to you kids? And we find out that half of what we're doing, our kids don't care about.
Oh my right? God, that's so true, Molly.
So when we can think about it's about family. Okay, if it's about family, let's talk to the family. What's important for everybody? What traditions are we absolutely not letting go of? And I'm going to put my energy there and I'm going to let some of the other stuff go that nobody cares about.
Isn't that true though? I mean, even in something as simple as, well, we always have these food items for dinner. Does everybody really want every single one of those food items? Almost never.
Almost never. No. So there's just so much more wiggle room than we think there is when we're willing to think outside the box and connect what feelings. I know for me, I would rather go to bed feeling grateful than going to bed feeling that wasn't the holiday I wanted. So if I know that ahead of time, because I've been there, I've gone to bed many a holiday night thinking that wasn't what I wanted. If I know how I want to feel, what can I create that will lead to that feeling? And I can, so for me, a great example would be, I want my kids to be happy. I don't control that. I don't control that. And you don't have to be divorced to know that sometimes kids are not happy on Christmas.
Now, what makes kids not happy on Christmas? Is it not getting what they want?
It could be anything. But the bottom line is, if I can say how I'm going to be happy on Christmas is letting go of perfection. Mm. Now, that's something I can control.
Yeah.
I'm going to laugh at everything that goes wrong. That's my decision today. Oh my goodness, another thing went wrong. You know what I'm saying? So we can decide ahead of time, this is how I'm going to move through this day. I'm going to have a sense of humor. I'm going to take a hot bath when it's over, whatever. It's all kinds of possibility open up when we want to think about it in a different way.
So true.
So true. And then, so T is the final one. Think outside the box.
Okay. Start thinking, Molly.
Start thinking outside the box. And this is that coming back to that idea of, if I'm going to be without my kids for the holidays, what's something I can do that would be totally outside the box that can make me feel great about that day? I can actually have a great day. You could serve in some way the community.
Absolutely.
You could have a total self-care day at home where you're watching your favorite movies and there's so many different ways. You could join your best friend at their home. Like, there's lots of ways.
We all know single people that do not have children. That's right. This is your opportunity to reach out to people with pets only.
Love it. I love that idea. That's such a great idea. So I just think as soon as we recognize how much power we have to create our reality, we can get busy putting all of our energy toward that. And those are the life-changing opportunities inherent to divorce. It's an opportunity to, you know, they say the thinking that got you here won't get you there. So when you can start to think about, I'm going to grow through this, I'm going to expand, and I'm going to have to think in different ways to do that. And no more blaming, no more blaming and victim mentality. I'm going to actually own this.
Without a doubt, absolutely. I don't know, with seven children, if you ever had the occasion to be able to do something like feed the homeless on a holiday. But I did one year.
Wow.
None of my family was in town. It wasn't because of a divorce. It was just because everybody was traveling for some reason. Right. All my family. So I volunteered to give meals out. I think it was Thanksgiving. It was the best Thanksgiving I ever had.
I love that.
And I wasn't ready for that. I just thought, well, okay, this is a really nice thing to do. I'll be with a lot of people. The act of service, though, was phenomenal. And I just a little aside, I had a friend who lost her child at 2 years old. Very, very ill. Oh, I mean, what a devastating concept for parents, right? Devastating. No. And she is such a strong human being that the way she healed herself was to be of service to others, just to get her out of, you know, after a good portion of the grieving was done. And that story always stayed with me because, I mean, could anything get worse than losing a child?
No. But that is such a beautiful example of following her heart.
Yeah.
As opposed to locking herself around this fantasy and refusing to let go of it.
Well, wrapping herself around just the devastation.
Right.
God, the sad.
No, but that's what I mean by the fantasy of it shouldn't have been this way.
I see what you're saying. I see.
I'm supposed to be with my child. And she had to open her heart and expand that.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. She sounds like an amazing woman.
She is an amazing woman. She really is. I want to go back to something that you said earlier, and it's part of what I read when I read about you, Molly.
Mm-hmm.
That is, sometimes to save yourself, you cannot save the marriage. Mm-hmm. Would you please address that?
Yes, I would. I really relate to that concept because I gave everything I had to save my marriage, to save my family. That's how I was thinking about it at the time. And it came to a point where I recognized the part that I was playing in our marriage to make it work. And that's the part that I wasn't being true to myself. But I think if you think of a relationship as a dance, both people have their part that they play. And when one person stops playing it, it doesn't work. And so I knew how to play that role. And then I had to really come to terms with, am I going to play the role that I know I have to play to make this work? Or am I going to actually take ownership of myself, of my truth? And if the marriage doesn't adjust to that, am I willing to let it go? And I think how that also connects is in my, I don't know, like you mentioned, when we come out of like childhood, we have these ideas. We want somebody to save us. And I think I did put a lot of that on my husband. Like, I wanted him to be the rescuer, to make things right, to make things all right for me and for us and our family. And I had to step into that role and take ownership of that, which was a real turning point for me, that I can't look to anybody else to fix this. I have to fix the part that I'm playing, and then I have to stay true to that. And when that ultimately led to divorce, to show up and be my own hero and put all of that energy I was putting into saving the marriage to now redeeming the situation for myself. I am going to make it. I am going to figure out the career piece of it because I had not had a career. I am going to figure out how our family is still going to be a family and redefine it and let it be messy and in process, but stay after it. So I love to think about it that way. Put your energy toward saving yourself, building a new life.
Was homeschooling one of the things you wanted to change because that was locking you in the house too much by any chance?
Yeah, that goes back to, again, just I was so fixated on the family. I was not thinking about what was good for me. And, you know, sometimes that can be, those things can work together. But in that case, I do think that homeschooling was too much for me. It was too difficult. And I really was losing myself in that process. And I started to kind of look down the road where I was headed with that and recognize I was, it's a kind of a hard way to say it, but I kind of started to see that the kids were racking up quite a debt with me. And it's kind of a hard thing to admit, but I realized I was starting to think, I gave everything for you. And if you ever meet older people that feel really entitled to things, it's because they were playing the martyr a little bit. The people were racking up debt and now you owe me. I sacrificed everything for you. Now you have to fill in the blank. And I started to notice that coming up for me, that I was like, I gave it all for you. It's always been about you. And I wasn't saying it. It was just the awareness, like, wow, I'm going to be an older person someday who thinks my kids owe me because I laid down my whole life for them. And I was like, that is not actually the legacy I want to hand on to my children.
That's so powerful and important, what you just said. Because I think it's so easy for any of us to get swallowed up by whatever circumstances we're in, whether it's a marriage or a job or a routine. Mm-hmm. We can get easily swallowed up and, you know, beautifully said, Molly, I think, and then racking up the debt.
Ouch.
Repay. Yeah. Wow. When you presented that to your husband, was there a point where he understood that, or was that two different languages?
That would have been probably part of the two different languages, because he didn't operate that way at all. And that was part of, if I'm going to call it dysfunction, there's lots of types of dysfunction. Part of, I just mean it doesn't work. I wanted him to step up and carry more of the load, but that wasn't how he was wired at all. So I'm like taking all this stuff on, and it wasn't his job to pick up more of it. I needed to let it go. But that was the part I played in the marriage, is I'm going to take care of all these different emotional pieces, like making sure the kids are okay all the time and making sure that they don't have to be out in the big bad world. I'm going to protect them and homeschool them, and, you know, carrying this big load so that they could be okay someday. I don't know. It's hard sometimes to get back into that mindset, because I'm so far from it now.
Understood. Was that your idea primarily, to homeschool, or was it mutual?
You know, it like anything, it always starts with the best of intentions. We had adopted two little girls, and we hadn't had them very long, and it was time for one of them to go to school. And I thought, she needs to be at home with me. That's how it originated. She hasn't been home long enough to go off into the world. And so that's how it began, was just a very, I think, beautiful, innocent desire to bond, to have more time to bond. And then it just morphed and became bigger. And then obviously, I got homeschooling more and more kids, and that got to be a bigger lift as the family grew and became school age. But I did love the men. I mean, there's a lot of philosophy around homeschool that I love to this day. My kids could work at their own pace. I had some kids who read earlier and some kids who read later, and it didn't matter because they all learned how to read. It was okay for them to be right where they were at. And so I loved some of these ideas and philosophies around what's possible in that type of educational environment. And it was me carrying too much. I give the example of the first therapist I ever went to. At that point, I was making like 3 home-cooked from scratch meals a day plus snacks for 9 people. And my therapist at the time, it was the first therapist I ever saw. This is when the wheels were kind of just starting to fall off. And she suggested that maybe we could do some cold cereal. And I was like, oh my goodness, no. Do cold cereal? And so just, again, that mentality of how attached I was to how things had to be, and not recognizing the toll it was taking on me.
Did your mother cook, well, at least 2 home-cooked meals a day, breakfast and dinner, at least?
Dinner, I would say. We had boxed cereal. So this was more like, I had kids that had some different challenges. And so, you know, you'd get on there and read about how, oh, you need to be very careful about what they're eating and their diet. And, you know, you're trying to address some difficult things with diet. And so that leads you to kind of having to make everything from scratch. And
I get it.
Not relying on some of those cheats. And again, there's value in all of that. But when it becomes a load that is just too heavy to carry, something has to give. And for me, it was one at a time. The very first thing that had to give was homeschooling. And I had to give up, and I had to recognize these kids are going to be okay. You're not personally responsible or capable of making sure that everything works out for your kids. You just can't carry that load. What you can be is okay yourself. You can be solid, a loving presence while your kids get tossed to and fro in the world, because that's life.
It's true.
So be okay yourself. Be the soft landing place, you know?
You know, I hadn't really thought about it. Obviously, a lot of people did some homeschooling during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I never thought about, you know, because, you know, I was not a stay-at-home mom, that they're learning more than education, book learning when they go to school. They're learning socialization. Mm-hmm. They're learning how to defend themselves. They're learning conflict resolution skills. They're learning how to be assertive, mm-hmm. you know, and speak out. So there's a lot they're learning when they go out, but I'm surprised at how many people homeschool. that I've met. I'm actually quite surprised.
Yeah, it's really popular in Idaho, I would say. I mean, I would say a larger than normal percentage of families homeschool in Idaho. And there are a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of good things. My older kids that graduated homeschool, they read like there's no tomorrow. Like these are readers and thinkers and they're well educated. They did great. My kids who are in regular school don't read as much. They don't.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I may be voting for one of your children someday. Who knows? The readers.
They shake their heads. They can't figure out why their younger siblings aren't big readers. But like that was part of what we did in our homeschool. We always read. We read like crazy. We read out loud. They were all reading all the time. So it is interesting. There's some positives.
Hats off to you for doing that. What are you doing? What are you and the children and the former husband and everybody, what are you doing for the holidays for Thanksgiving first and then Christmas Eve, Christmas Day for those who celebrate? Well, there's Hanukkah in there for those who celebrate. So what are you doing though?
We're having Wednesday night, we'll have Thanksgiving all together. So again, we're not attached to days. Thursday will be just a relaxing day for us.
Who's we? Who's getting together?
All of us together. So
former biological dad.
Okay. All of our kids. We have two little grandkids now. And then our significant others will also be there. So all of us together, we're all contributing. And our oldest daughter is hosting.
No way. Your oldest daughter.
Mm-hmm.
How old is she?
She's 28.
Oh, my stars. Okay. And then on the actual Thanksgiving Day, after you watch the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, what will you be doing?
We're going to have cinnamon rolls and we're going to watch a movie. And that's what we have planned so far. So Thanksgiving Day will be really mellow because we'll have already had our Thanksgiving, all of us together.
And you'll have had leftovers.
And we'll have leftovers too.
I mean, this is airing in December. So Thanksgiving has already happened, but this is what Molly did on Thanksgiving now, but still Christmas is coming up. So have you dealt with that yet?
We are actually when we get all of us together on Thanksgiving, we have a Christmas drawing that we do and we're going to make our calendar because we do have some really fun Christmas traditions that we all want to do together still. So we'll put those on the calendar and we'll make a plan. But we will have a Christmas together. We haven't figured it all out yet.
This is really such an inspiration. I have to tell you, I haven't spoken to anybody who is so advanced. And I guess that's how I look at it, but so amicable. Let's use the word of the show. Yeah. So amicable that you get together as an extended family.
Right? I am so grateful. And that's... it's my little, every divorce coach is going to have their specialty. If you want to say this is mine. It isn't going to be for everybody, but for people who want to know it's possible, I want to help them. I want to help them make a situation that is as close to what they dream of as possible. And in my case, it already exceeds what I hoped was possible. Like I wanted it to be good. I couldn't have imagined it could be this good.
I'm so happy that I met you because we talk about this type of thing when we're in mediations, but I've never really talked to anybody who did it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I went through about gift, like for holidays. This is the work. It's bigger than that. It is really deconstructing. What is a family? Is it true? Could it be something different? And really unpacking these ideas that we have and seeing if we can explore a different way to be. So that's my whole approach, is letting go of how you think things are supposed to be and working in the most creative, wily, resourceful way to create something new. That's what I want to do.
And I think that that's the biggest gift you could give anybody. And I don't think we can do anything more than that. You've just hit the essence of what this conversation, this show is about.
Mm-hmm.
You've just done it. How do people get in touch with you? Because I think there's going to be a desire.
I'd love that. I'm on Instagram at Molly Blue Wilder, just like it sounds.
B-L-U-E, Molly Blue Wilder.
Molly Blue Wilder, yes. And I'm also on AvailDivorce.com as one of their coaches. So those are kind of the two places you can find me. I'm also on Facebook, Molly Wilder, but I'm most active on Instagram.
Okay. And Avail. So with you, that's the first time I've heard of that resource.
Yes.
A-V-A-I-L.
Yes. AvailDivorce.com, just like you spelled it. Yeah.
Thank you. And I wish you a very Merry Christmas. You were my gift. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was so much fun.
And it was so much, it's always so much fun to have all of you here. I do appreciate every single one of you that joins us each week. Please spread this to your friends. Subscribe to the show. We have the best guests ever. I love all of you, I have to say, guests. And you know what that ending line is. As always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.